Hello?
Polly,
Hi.
you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Okay.
We're all good.
Let's try this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You're tuned to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. Anything you hear in today's episode, at Sideshow on Twitter. Think Peter. Facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. And I didn't say it's another Friday afternoon. I'm learning. Let's get to today's guest. Pollyanna Wilkinson, better known to me as Polly, is designing a garden at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show 2018. Let's get straight into it. Polly, how are you, my dear?
I'm so well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic as always. There's a faint, you may be able to hear it, sound of lawnmowers in the background, but that's allowed in the middle of summer, isn't it? I hope it is. Polly, talk to me about this garden. We'll get into you and who you are and what you do in just a little bit, but it's something I said to James Basson, it's something I said to Andrew Fisher-Tomlin. There are two types of respect in the horticultural industry. One is, do I respect the gardens that you build and make and create and design? And the other is, do I respect the individual? To analogize that, as we did off air, bear with me folks, you're about to play Sideshow Bingo. It is very much seeing the beautiful woman on the far side of the bar, and it transpires that she doesn't like compost under your fingernails and notes that. And so all of a sudden the looks and the appearance and what initially attracted you to her a little bit go by the wayside and you walk away. In your case, it was the entire opposite, Polly, but I was endeared to something that you had drawn, a picture that has not been created in reality just yet, and I hope all of that makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah. So the garden that I'm making, it's basically looking at social media, and in particular the impact that it's having on, I guess, I mean, everyone's well-being. I kind of, when I was designing it, I had young people in mind, just because that's what sort of inspired me to design it. But it's really looking at what it's doing to us and our mental health. I was inspired to do the garden because I'm a trained counsellor and I used to work with young people. And just something I noticed over and over again that was coming up was social media and this compare and despair, basically, that seemed to be coming from living a lot of their lives through social media. And it's always stuck with me as a problem, basically, hence the title, about how we navigate using something which is really great and has so many great aspects to it. And I'm one of the biggest users out there. But how we use it mindfully and sort of, you know, use it for our benefit, whilst being mindful of the downsides, I guess.
The logic point that you have made there, Polly, makes perfect sense, that in any walk of life, essentially, I mean, if we go back 30 years ago when I was in the Cubs or the Scouts or the local football team, essentially what you're saying is, yes, Peter, it is that there was a case where having a club and being involved in society and being part of something is hugely important. However, there are always one or two people who don't think as logic, maybe, as you or I. And this has been translated into a modern day world of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc. Is that essentially what you're saying?
I guess so. I mean, kind of. But I guess I just think, I think social media is basically what everyone uses now, right? I mean, it's not just young people. It's young, it's old, it's anyone with a smartphone. I think we all use it. I think we're all a bit complicit in maybe putting up pictures that don't necessarily present reality as it really is. But I mean, equally, there are some fantastic people out there that really put it as it is, and it's those which I think add real positives. For example, another reason I designed the garden was when I was a new mum a couple of years ago, I spent ages on social media because I had a small baby and I was at home all day, and I was looking at people's lives with these amazing houses and these perfect happy families, and I just thought, this is, you know, not sort of reflecting my internal experience of motherhood. And I realized that was really not healthy, to sort of compare my real life and my internal experience with that which people are putting out there. And I guess I just wanted to put that in the form of a garden, and that metaphor, you know, the garden seems to be a really great way of being able to do that. I'm really excited to translate that experience into a garden, hoping that it will inspire maybe some younger people to take an interest, anything that's sort of going to bring a younger crowd to Hampton Court, and maybe, you know, it's a hopefully a topic they're interested in and will get people thinking.
Well, let's get into it then, Polly. How does one, that was a very enthusiastic yeah. Let's get into how does one translate a message, a metaphor, as you call it, into something that is essentially photosynthetic and pretty. And Peter's way of maybe describing things of my imagination or of the mind, very much in mind on this one. There are, again, two things. You can put out all the messages you want, but if this garden doesn't woo me or doesn't draw me over to it, essentially that message is, it's a bollard, it's a bus stop that is surplus to requirements. How have you gone about it, and what is the picture that people will then see at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show 2018?
Okay, so I've gone quite literal with it. So it's a garden of two halves. On one half, we've got what is going to be essentially a really ordinary garden. And what I'm going to try and capture there is what you'd expect in a really standard suburban terraced garden. It's not meant to be unpleasant, nor is it meant to be particularly pleasant. It's meant to be mundane. So the grass will be overgrown. There will be plants in totally the wrong place. There will be individual plants. You know, I think as a designer, you're taught planting groups and, you know, don't just dot them round. So there will very much be that classic thing of going to a garden centre and buying one plant, putting it in, not necessarily thinking, is this the right aspect? You know, should this be front, back and border? So it's, there would very much be what I hope, although this is going to be the challenge of trying to capture the ordinary nature of a standard garden. It will have a washing line. It will have kids' toys. It will have slug-eaten hostas and plants in totally the wrong pots. And so it's, I hope it will be, I hope it will look as ordinary as possible. And really, it will have some really lovely cultivars in there. And that is meant to be, for me, the sort of nod towards the good things in life, that life is not all bad or not all good. So, you know, it's a real roller coaster. So it will have really pleasant things. And it will equally have some unpleasant things. There's going to be plenty of weeds because, you know, as I said, life's not perfect. So that's really meant to be a metaphor for everyday life. Then there's going to be a giant smartphone in the middle dividing the garden. And on the other side will be this, I don't want to say perfect because I'm not, you know, perfect, so subjective. There will be an idealistic garden on the other side. And that is meant to represent the online world. And here I'm using artificial plants, a few, which is a bit of a scandal, but they're very literally there to represent the artifice of what you see on social media. There will be plants that you wouldn't necessarily rush to put in a garden at the moment, ones that are prone to disease or particular pests. So there'll be plenty of buxus in there. Some of the plants are going to have healing properties. Some will be toxic. Again, you know, everything is repeating back to that message. Social media can be good for you. Social media can also be bad for you. It's meant to feel unachievable. So there are going to be agave in there that are non-hardy, die in this country. So it's meant to be something you couldn't replicate realistically, because sometimes what you see on social media, you can't replicate, you know, for money or lifestyle.
But Polly, you've got a scenario in here. And for those who are not aware at home, let me just simplify this for you. If I turn around and say, well, I'm going to build a Tuscany style garden, which is really quite simple. It's usually 20 meters by 10. You walk towards the 20 meter side of it. If you understand me as a rectangle, you walk to the long side of it for those who listen at home. It's got four pleach trees or four umbrella-esque shaped trees, one in each quarter. It's got a crisscross straight through the middle of a path. It's got some quite sexy paving and a bench in the middle. Boom, that's it. Give me my gold medal. I followed the brief. Pause. In this one, you have said that I love you. And then the judges based on your brief, get to say, and I'll get to the explanation of this in a minute, bear with me, folks, that maybe she did not show that she loves him enough. There's an interpretive part of it as versus an equational analysis of the garden or judging of the garden. In a nutshell, what you noted to me were weeds, hostas, that were imperfect, and things that were out of place. So medals in mind, you've put yourself in slightly a precarious situation based on what you have just described to me. Is that a fair point? If you understand me, how are you going to get it intentionally so wrong, which fulfills then the brief?
It makes total sense. Yeah. And I guess that is a risk because I'm explicitly trying to make it not perfect, which is not what you're used to seeing. I mean, I've been very frank in my brief about the fact that it will be imperfect, and I think actually my challenge I haven't really been thinking about a medal. This is my first time. I'd be so pleased to get anything, but I'm really determined to try and capture the ordinary, and that's my brief. Okay, it's not perfect, and I know most people are aspiring to something closer to perfection at the shows, but you know, I believe we're judged on our brief rather than what's necessarily completely aesthetically pleasing. I know that it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and you're definitely not going to get, the people coming by and saying they want to replicate that in their garden. Well, maybe they'll take some ideas from some of the nice cultivars, but yeah, it's not an aspirational garden.
Well, here's the other side of it. And I had this conversation with Stuart Charles Toner, who is designing at Chelsea 2018. And essentially, there are three medals on the board. One is you build a, let's call it, Tuscany-style garden. It's an equation. He's fulfilled the equation. Boom, give him gold. The PR people are extremely happy. Number two, I build a garden that is easily replicated. People walk past and they say, well, I like this garden. How much to have this built in my garden? You say, well, that's 50, 100, 100,000 pounds. And they say, sure, I'll take two of them, have done something a little bit different. So it's not a work medal because it can't be replicated. It's more, shall I call it, interpretive art. It's a little bit a la maybe what James Besson did at Chelsea in 2017. It's open to interpretation. Not everybody will like it, as you rightly alluded to, but some will take a lot from it, hopefully, and for all of the right reasons. And you've discounted yourself, possibly, on let's go with the hostas, where the judges will say, well, they're not imperfect enough. So they may downgrade you based on that. But why go this route? Because I know your work and you're a talented young lady who I have a lot of respect for as an individual, and I have a lot of respect for your work.
Do you know what? I'm right at the beginning of my career here. I've only been qualified 18 months. I'm counting myself pretty lucky to be at the show. And for me, this concept was more important to me than creating, you know, the types of gardens that you've described, because, you know, I hope my time will come where I can do the beautiful show gardens, you know, if I'm lucky. But this, for me, I'm really committed to this concept. I submitted it without a sponsor, so I was going to self-fund. I'm really lucky to have Works Landroid sponsoring me, which I'm thrilled about. They're such lovely people. But for me, this was, when I thought of this concept, not only does it mean a lot to me, it means a lot to a lot of people. It seems to have really captured people's imaginations. And it is something which is at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And okay, yeah, it's gonna be very challenging to, as you say, make the most imperfect hosta. But, you know, hopefully my time will come for medals. And at the moment, I'm more focused on trying to sort of convey the message that I want to convey, and I don't know, hopefully inspire some people to think about gardens differently. And that's why I love the concept gardens at Hampton Court. They don't necessarily have to be pretty. They're not always pretty, and they really divide opinion, which I also love.
To be quite honest with you, Polly, I have no doubt that your time will come sooner than you most probably think from where I'm sitting anyway. But again, that's one of the reasons why I'm on the phone to you. Let's sidetrack if we can, because you're talking to a gentleman who has, gentleman you say at home, you're talking to a man anyway, who has built gardens with sponsor and without sponsor. You went in accepting that that wasn't going to be the case. How did it work out in the way it has?
So, yeah, I went in expecting to pay for it myself. So I tried to keep the design pretty pared down. I was on a really low budget. And so, got accepted myself, expected to pay for myself, and then started reaching out to, I emailed so many people, all sorts of charities, all of whom were super supportive, but I understand a lot of charities actually are trying to raise money rather than give it away, which, yeah, that's fair enough. And then it just so happened I already had an existing relationship with Works, who make robotic lawnmowers and lots of other power tools, through having a robotic mower myself. So I just got in touch with them, and they were really, really keen. They always have a presence at Hampton Court, but this year they're not having a stand, and instead they've chosen to sponsor me, which is really exciting. And obviously Works are very big into technology, and they really sort of shared my passion for the fact that I am super pro technology. It's the future, you know, whether it be social media or whether it be a power tool, it's there to improve our lives. So they were really on board with sort of technology being the future, and it's how we use it for our benefit. So I'm really, really lucky to have such a fantastic sponsor on board, and ones that, you know, were perfectly happy to accept my design as is. There's been, you know, no amends based on their preference, because they came in after it had been designed ultimately. So I count myself really lucky.
Must be a little bit of a weight off your shoulders though, Polly.
Yeah, I've got two small kids in childcare, which is expensive, and you know, I'm still new to the game, so I'm not bringing in the huge gardens yet. So it's a huge relief to me and my husband.
How did you get into horticulture? Where did you study? How did you get to where you are now?
So I used to work in the city in marketing for a law firm, and then I had my kids and basically realised I didn't want to work in the city anymore. It was never something I really wanted to do. I fell into it after uni, and having the kids made me realise that if I wanted to be a working mum, which I absolutely did, then it needed to be doing something that I loved. So I actually trained in my second maternity leave towards the end of that. I trained at the English Gardening School at the Chelsea Physic Garden with Rosemary Alexander, who is amazing. And I loved it. It was great. I've always loved gardening, but I don't pretend to come from this from, a horticultural background at all. I'm not sort of RHS qualified in that field. I've come from the design route, come from a very creative family, and always had a passion for horticulture. And it just felt like the right time for me. So that's sort of how I've come to it. So I qualified about 18 months ago, and it's been non-stop since then.
I've had this conversation a couple of times, and I'm not taking the mick out of you here in any way, but when one turns around and says, oh my God, I'd love to design gardens for a living, and then you actually go into it and you go, God, what have I done? I should have stayed in marketing. Really? You're joking me? Seriously? This is ridiculous. It's been raining for 8 weeks solid. We've had particularly bad elongated winter, the worst I've seen in business, and I'll double underline that, in business since 2010, heading into 2011. How has it gone for you 18 months since qualifying?
I mean, my first year was great. I was really lucky. I got a lot of jobs really quickly, all through word of mouth. And it was the total opposite. I was like, why did I wait so long? Why did I wait till my 30s to do this? And I've loved it, regardless of the weather. But then, yeah, this year, weather has been not so great. Things are a bit quieter, and it does scare me a little bit sometimes to, you know, I kind of miss that regular paycheck. You know, you turn up and you do the work and you get paid. So there's definitely an unpredictability, which is a little nerve-wracking. And I guess that's the nature of the beast, right?
Yes, very much so.
But, you know, I currently work for myself. I've got small kids, so if they get sick, I don't have to ask a boss if I can take the day off. I love working for myself and, you know, working directly with clients. I work with lovely people. All the landscapers I work with are awesome. I love it. And yet it comes with some risks and some unpredictability, but no way I don't miss the city life at all.
Curiosity killer cat, who's building the garden for you at Hampton, and how did that relationship strike up?
So, well, I've kind of got two companies building it. So I've got Ed from Burnham Landscaping, who is amazing. I was just introduced through some local guys, actually. I met him about a year ago, and I got in touch when I designed the garden to pick his brains, really. I didn't think for a second he would be interested in building my garden as such a newbie, and he's such a veteran now. He's done, God, so many, I can't even count. And then he's also brought on Ross from Conquest Creative Spaces, who's going to be building the garden. So we're going to be doing that all together. So I've met Ross quite recently, and he's brilliant as well. Such a nice guy. So I'm really lucky to have two such experienced landscapers on board.
Is there anybody else that's tied in with you on this garden, Polly? Because I'm conscious from my own side of things that when you have no sponsor in place, you beg, borrow and steal essentially, well, bar the stealing bit, but you know what I mean, folks. Anything you can lay your hands on from plants in exchange for a mention to try and piece it all together. And then you've had the unusual scenario where you then ended up with a sponsor. So did you let go of those people that you had brought on board? Or yes, how did that all work out for you?
Definitely. I've got loads of people on board, loads of begging and borrowing. I've got London Stone, it would be amazing. I've got Stone from them. I've got Lockman doing timber, Palm Exotics. They went to Spain for me to get the agave, which is going to be awesome. Adam Christopher's lending me some pots. I've got Raw Studio making the really large swing that's going to be in the centre of the garden. Yeah, so everyone has been unbelievably generous. Some people are lending things, some things have been donated. Harrowood and Turf are providing me with some very overgrown grass, which is going to look so good. So people have been extremely generous. I am paying for a lot of it. All the plants will be paid for, and all sorts of other bits. But yeah, there's definitely been some favours pulled in, and Ed's been instrumental in that as well. It's been a real team effort, and everyone's been so helpful, given I'm pretty unknown.
How did you go about doing the weed side of this, Polly?
The weeds, so they are currently growing in my garden, because funnily enough, nurseries don't really provide dandelions and things to buy. So I'm growing weeds myself.
Okay, and if you don't mind, and I take the logic of that, you're right. Nurseries don't grow weeds. They don't grow to go with James Besson's garden from 17 in Chelsea. They don't grow imperfect plants. Or I don't personally know of any nurseries that grow plants imperfectly, intentionally, on purpose, because designers don't usually ask for them. So how many weeds have you got growing at this moment in time? And silly as this sounds, but how did you go about propagating them?
God, you're making it sound way more scientific than I've approached this. My garden, I basically just left all the weeds in the lawn. I've just got loads of pots. Every time I come across a dandelion in the garden or on a walk in the park, dug it up, put it in a pot. You know, a lot will be nearer the time as well. I'll need to get some more. My family are growing some for me as well. There's not really been much in the way of propagation, more just digging up when we see them and throwing them in pots. Hostas, got them in my garden, no pellets, no nematodes, no nothing. So yeah, I've got some pretty ruined hostas already. I've also got two small kids that like to savage the plants in my garden with footballs and things like that. So they've been helping in their own special way as well. The imperfect ones are actually they're easy for me to handle. It's the perfect ones that I'm glad I'm getting from Horses Loci instead.
Because we're in podcast land, people will be listening to this in 2019, and you will by then logically have gone on to the next level. If we have this phone conversation, what's the transition going to be? Have you pictured that? Have you thought about that? Where do you hope this to bring you? You're a clever woman. You're a very clever lady. Again, I'll go back to that respect for how you conduct yourself and also what you create of a photosynthetic nature. Let's put it that way.
I'm loving the flattery here. Can I come on every week? It's lovely. in a year, I mean, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I'm still new. I've got so much to learn. I hope that we'll be speaking another year and I'll be doing another garden, maybe a different category, maybe a different showground, who knows? I need to start thinking. But I'd really, in another year, I hope I've got some more really exciting gardens from private clients under my belt. I have thought it would be really cool to work with someone more experienced and learn from them. I don't know how I would pursue that, but that's definitely something in the back of my mind I'm looking to do, because I think working on your own and working when you're new as well, it can be quite lonely. And I've got my peers from my course and various other contacts, funnily enough, who I've met through Instagram, who I sort of reach out to pick the brains of. But it's you know, I think learning from people more experienced would also really help me. So in a year, I guess, to be busy, to be working on interesting projects and hopefully to have another garden booked in for another show would be, you know, all I could hope for, really.
From a family perspective, Polly, show garden building, and you noted there, horticulture and the world that we work in can be a little bit lonely at the best of times. It's not for everybody, to put that in a very polite manner. To go and build show gardens is, I guess, the ultimate tester, because you're essentially locked in a space, a confined space of 20 meters by 10 or 10 by 8 or some variation of, for the guts of about a month and a half. Income or lack of aside, it does trial one who in this case has two children who I would suggest, based on what you've said, you're used to being around a little bit. This is going to be mommy's not home and it's 10 o'clock for a while. Is that okay to say that, number one? And do you take what I'm saying, number two?
Yeah, I mean, I am the one that's at home more. My husband works for himself as well, but in London. So I'm the one that does the pickups and the drop-offs. But I am a full-time working mum at the moment. Yeah, it's going to be much longer hours. I'm really lucky to have a husband that does work for himself and who knows exactly what's coming in the next few weeks. It's, you know, it's challenging, but it's doable. This isn't a hobby for me. This is my career, and I take that really seriously. And as a hardcore feminist, I really want to make sure that my career is something that we really push, as well as my husband. I want the boys to see me as, you know, ambitious and working hard and with roping in family and friends. And, you know, I'm really lucky. I only live half a mile from Hampton Court. So, you know, it's not going to be difficult to nip home if I need to.
Changes things a lot.
Changes things massively. It's definitely one of the reasons I chose Hampton Court. You know, it's a 5-minute bike ride home.
Yeah, well, I know from talking to Pip Probert, she said to me that Tatton was her local and that's why she likes going there. I have to be very honest with you. If Peter is building a garden abroad, which I have and will be doing, it is very much a case of, I'll talk to you if I can at 10 o'clock tonight, if you're still awake. If not, I'll talk to you at 6 o'clock in the morning on my way to build that garden. And that's irrespective of whether you're the dad or the mom. That is just show garden building.
That's totally it. I mean, show garden, well, no, I see clients in the evening. I see clients at the weekend. Just make it work. You know, if the kids are sick, then I stay at home with them in the day and I figure out a way, you know, I work through the night. I just get it done. And I count myself pretty lucky to do that I can dictate my own hours. Obviously, the show, a little less so, but I've got loads of people coming to help man the garden and really great friends and family nearby. I hope the boys might come and have a look. They're only 3 and 2, so I don't know whether they'll be particularly interested, but hopefully they'll come and have a look for a day. So yeah, just make it work.
I think I said to my daughter, now 8 years of age, I rang her from the States last year and I said, did you see Daddy on the television? And she said, yes, Dad, but wait and I show you this unicorn. And that was essentially Peter, yeah, put a lot in context. When do you start building, Polly?
The 18th.
Are you still laughing at me?
I am. I'm laughing about your unicorn. I love a good unicorn. Fair enough. I'd want to see that unicorn.
I don't know. Yeah.
You asked me when are we starting building? Yeah. 18th. Wowzers, that's coming up quick.
It is. Hampton Court Palace Flower Show takes place the 3rd till the 8th of July 2018. Pollyanna. I can't call you Polly on the official outro, can I?
Let's go with Polly.
Okay.
Pollyanna's when I'm being fancy.
Wow. Okay. I'm moving up in the world. Polly Wilkinson, thank you so much for your time. For those of you listening at home, anything you need, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. I think I've got all of that right. Polly, thank you so much for coming on the Sideshow.
Thank you so much. It's been an honour. I'm a total fangirl.
I'm unsure what the fangirl thing is.
Fangirl. It's like, you know, a female fan. You know, like to be a big fan. And also female.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're female. And when somebody says fangirl, I think Justin Bieber. And I look nothing like him. And I'm not a great singer.
Well, that's to say that you're the Justin Bieber of the horticultural podcast world. There you go.
Oh, my God. This is worse than the conversation I had with Fisher Tomlin about Shania Twain.